Good morning, Paul.
Well, as I explained to listeners beforehand, before I put you on air, you have experience not only as a journalist, but, you know, someone who's just lived in the UK for so long. So I just love your perspective. We've heard the political perspectives all around the place, all the pundits who tell us about Brexit and what's wrong with it, what's right with it. How do you feel about Brexit as someone who resides in the UK right now?
Well, it's a loaded question, but you've always been good at loaded questions, Paul. There's no one single answer really to that. It really depends on everybody's own perspective. But Brexit as a whole means different things to so many different people. But to give you an idea from a business perspective, you and your listeners will recall, of course, that the United Kingdom never entered the European Monetary Union, and therefore there was always a differential between the euro and the pound. Certain people are predicting that that gap will grow wider and that the pound will drop. Some people are saying, others are not saying that. It's really hard to predict. But briefly, just from a business perspective, the one or two business people that I've spoken to, and I'm talking about semi-industrialists here, so, you know, people who might have a factory in the north of England and they're doing business with someone in France or Germany, they're still going to do it. They're still going to do business with their European counterparts.
Mm.
There might be some forms to fill in, and there might be some licenses to buy, but it's not going to stop people from trading with this massive block of Europe from British companies. And at the same time, you've got European companies that sell into Britain. For example, BMW's biggest single market outside of Germany is the United Kingdom. So that might give you some perspective on how some people are seeing business.
Mm. Now, why do you think the UK voted for Brexit? And do you think if they were given a second opportunity, they'd vote the same?
Another good question. And I think it was very emotive at the time. Lots of different perspectives were put on the table and lots of different reasons were put on the table. One of the chief reasons that a lot of people seemed to vote for Brexit was fear of losing jobs, jobs for British people to Europeans who could at any time, under the Charter, come and live in the United Kingdom and find a job. And indeed, that did happen. A lot of people have come to be educated, come to work, and so on in the United Kingdom. So now there are two views of that, that was actually a good thing, according to some politicians, that a lot of skilled and unskilled people would come to the United Kingdom and they were doing jobs that were available for them and perhaps jobs that some Brits might not want to do.
Mm.
I'm not saying that that's the entire reason, but that's just one reason in the very, very early days of Brexit that some people cited that case. So it became very much a job protection thing and let's vote to leave the European Union. We don't want all these people coming to steal our jobs. Whether that would have happened and whether that's true, we'll only know in the future. But that was one of the reasons.
And the second part of the question, do you think if they had a second opportunity, they'd vote no?
I don't know. We talk about this, but I don't know. I don't know whether they would or whether they wouldn't. I think the second major reason seemed to be that Britain didn't want to be dictated to by Brussels on policy. Certainly the sovereign policies that were being made in Europe about how Britain would operate, certainly from a financial point of view as well. You know, rules being made by unelected officials in Brussels who were public servants, are public servants, and they make rules and regulations based on, you know, the good of everybody in Europe. And a lot of Brits didn't like that. They didn't like being told what to do by bureaucrats in Brussels.
Mm.
And preferred to make their own choices via their elected officials rather than officials who were not elected in Brussels. So again, that's another reason that came out. But to answer your question, if there was a vote again, I'd be guessing. My guess would be they'd probably vote to stay in, but I'm guessing. No one really knows. And, you know, even if you sit around a dinner table, you get divided opinion about that. So, you know, that's where it sits. I know that's not being terribly terribly positive.
But
where it is.
It's quite a toss-up, isn't it? I mean, it is dividing the nation. There's no doubt about it. Now, the PM, she seems like a really tough cookie. and she might survive this today. She just seems to go on, sort of paddle through no matter what hits her. She's very, very tough. She's sort of like the Iron Woman again, Mark II. But what about somebody like Boris taking over as PM? Could you see England under Boris?
Well, she's very resilient, and she's a true politician. There's no question about that. And what we've seen in the past year or so, as we get closer to Brexit, is that politics is playing a much bigger hand than some of the issues on their own. Boris, again, he's a highly educated person. He's a good politician. He seems to understand what he's doing. But once again, the nation is divided about who would lead the country if it were not the Prime Minister of today.
Mm.
So, again, it is a polarizing issue where, well, if you remember the vote, it was so close, wasn't it? It was 49-51.
Mm. And people are accusing him of being a loose cannon. I don't see him that way. I see he's quite colourful, but I think he's quite measured. You know what I mean? The public might see the buffoonery now and again, but I think he's a measured politician, and I think somebody who's just waiting in the wings. And I think he's quite intelligent.
Oh, there's no question. He's definitely intelligent, and he's seized a number of opportunities in recent times, political opportunities, finding the cracks in the current government's armour, and going for it. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing depends on your view of Boris. There's no question that he's an accomplished individual, but whether the country would vote for him, which was your original question, I don't know the answer to that. There are other people in the wings, of course, that haven't raised their heads and their intentions to lead the country if it weren't the Prime Minister of today.
Mm.
So we'd have to wait and see. But he does come across as a bit of a buffoon, but I think he does that on purpose to appeal to a broad range of individuals across the country who might quite like that cavalier approach.
Absolutely.
To politics.
Absolutely.
You
know, similar, I guess, to Donald Trump. Talk about cavalier. Did you see that? Did you see that media photo opportunity in the White House Oval Office yesterday?
I did, and it's amazing, isn't it? It just never ceases to amaze me what we see in the media about Donald Trump. And I don't know how much of it you can believe. But once again, if you go back to what the American people were looking for when they voted for Trump, they were looking for an identity that they didn't have. They felt that their identity was slipping into the Atlantic. So it was said by certain pundits that all Donald Trump was saying is what the vast majority of Americans believed anyway.
That's right. You
know, some of his outlandish statements and outlandish policies were what he believed the American people really wanted.
Mm.
Whether that's true, you know, it's politics, Paul, at the end of the day. So
absolutely.
Whether that's true or not. We don't know, but you're quite right. He's certainly a colourful character.
Yeah, that was extraordinary yesterday. Now, can we finish this up by asking Steve Marnie, my good friend Steve Marnie, who lives in the UK and does so many media sort of things all around the world, in France, Dubai, lots of parts of Europe. Where are you at the moment with your career there?
Well, I suppose the easiest way to sum it up is to say a media consultant. I help other people to set up media companies, whether it's broadcast or whether it's communications. I help people put their companies together with a communications strategy within that company. So internal communications, external communications. I help people to understand how to deal with the media. Crisis communications comes into that as well. So it's really as a consultant. And I suppose if I look back over the last 15 or 20 years, that's where I've gravitated to from being a broadcaster like your good self, Paul.
Absolutely. And, of course, we both started off together. And it was interesting, through all that media career of you, you've done news reading, you've done reporting, you're now doing media consulting. And in amongst all that, you owned an English pub. How did that come about?
It was one of those bucket list things. It was one of the 10 things you'd like to do before you pop off this mortal coil, and one of them was to run an English pub. What I'd forgotten about I suppose, well, it was a lot of hard work. And standing in an English pub drinking a pint of warm English beer is quite different from running the thing and employing half a dozen people to help you to do it.
Yeah,
it was great fun. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was never going to be a long-term career swap, but it was. I fulfilled a lifelong ambition to stand behind the bar and pull one of those very long, thin sticks that pull out the warm English beer. So, which isn't warm, by the way. But, That's the joke.
Yeah, that's the joke. And of course, all of that started, and I'll just let the listeners know and let them in on this, that all started with you and I having a drink in Sydney, and you were a Qantas flight attendant and had been for some time internationally. And you said, Paul, how do I get into the media? And I gave you some advice. You quit that job. You took my advice, and you ended up doing some massive things in the media. So it's been a wonderful journey from that original night when you and I were sitting in a bar getting snakes hissed.
Indeed. And I think the only thing I can say to that is persistence is the only thing that keeps you going.
It is too. And I told you how to start it. I said, look, you're not going to get into the city straight away. Go to maybe a country radio station and start your journalistic career there. And that's exactly what you did. And you ended up being my boss in Adelaide. Folks, he came back to Adelaide, a program called State Affair, which I was working on as a reporter. And they said, oh, I'll meet your new boss. And Steve Marnie said, g'day, Paul, how are you? That was a funny one.
Yeah, it was. It was quite an interesting journey. I thoroughly enjoyed being at the sharp end, but the opportunity came. I was working at the ABC in Adelaide at the time, and obviously, you meet people in the media at other channels, and I was aware that there was a producer position coming up at Channel 7, which is where you were working. I applied for that, and they said, "Well, you seem to have the right background, Steve. We'll give you a try." So that's really just how it happens.
Absolutely.
I've never looked back.
You've never looked back. No, just fantastic. So, look, if you ever get to Port Douglas, up to this area, don't be a stranger. Even if the light's not on, knock on the door.
Well, now you've got witnesses that you've invited me to Port Douglas, Paul.
Absolutely.
So I'll be there as soon as I possibly can.
And I'll buy you a nice cold beer.
Sounds good, mate. Thank you.
All right. See you, Steve.
Okay, Paul. Cheers for now. Bye.